Welcome to the Open Hearted Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Open Hearted Podcast. I'm your host, Will Wheeler, joined with my main man, Photon John. What's going on, Kev?
Not much. Just recovering from a birthday weekend. How about yourself?
Was it your birth? I wished you happy birthday, right?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Damn, man. Oh, nice. The big 2-5.
Yeah. I'm 21 twice over.
Yeah, cool. So did you end up going out and doing anything?
I just had dinner with friends. Meant to be a quiet one, but with my friends, that's...
crazy. Oh, well, your birthday only comes around once a year, man, so you might as well make the most of it, right? Nice. But I tell you what, we've got a really awesome guest coming on today. Really awesome topic what we're going to be covering. We'll call the guest up in a sec, but we're going to be talking about overcoming barriers from no GCSE to a master's degree. And just for any Australian listeners out there, I'm assuming a GCSE is like your ATAR OP equivalent to what we have here in Australia type of thing. So, Kev, did you want to call up our guest so we can get stuck into this plan?
Yeah, so today we're talking to Keisha Adia Swaby. Hello.
Yay.
Hi. Keisha, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, guys. I'm really good.
All the way from Manchester in the UK. What a pleasure. And like we said, it's, we've been sort of connected for a while, and it's good to be touching base. We had a bit of a scare at the beginning. so we had a message. You were saying that you got the times mixed up. Probably an hour before, I thought that you had to get the kids off and you weren't able to make it. I'm thinking, oh my God, we can't make it while we organize this. But we're here, we're ready to rock and roll. Yeah. But you know what? Sometimes this is my greatest fear, especially when you are dealing with people from all over the world. Time differences and all that can be so tricky to juggle, but let's get stuck into this. But before we do, I might just do a quick shout out what we normally do. So for anyone listening today, please subscribe, like, and follow to all of our social media platforms. We're on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, LinkedIn, and please subscribe to our openheartedsociety.com website, where we've got all of our past and present podcasts and blogs there ready for people to check out. So let's get stuck into this. So, we're talking a little bit before. Before we do say anything, we've just got someone giving us a shout out, Carlos, chiming in from Denver. Awesome. Good to see you, Carlos. I hope you enjoy the podcast today. But more than anything, you've got a fantastic story, and we'll hear more about that. But please share with our audience a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so I'm Keisha. I live in UK, Manchester, and I've got 4 children, married, and came to the UK at the age of 14 to sort of in search of that streets that were paved with gold, and obviously it's not. So, I now live in the UK, and it's been a journey and a half from where I'm going to delve into a little bit more later on in regards to all the challenges and everything that I've done to overcome all of this and where I'm at right now. So, yeah, that's just me for now.
Nice. You said that, you came to the UK from Jamaica. And you were like, oh, yeah, to see the streets of gold and stuff like that. How much of a shock was it? Was it a bit of a shock when you got to the UK and it was like maybe completely different to what you would imagine in your head?
I'm so glad you asked that, because growing up in Jamaica, I've only ever seen, like, we used to get these postcards. My grandparents used to get these postcards from their children that lived in the UK, and it always had snow covered, and then that little bird, I don't know what bird, what that bird's called. It always comes out at Christmas, the little ones. And I've never seen, so when I came and I saw that, there was dirt. I was shocked. I really was shocked, because I didn't know what was below, and I've always heard that the UK streets are paved with gold. But
you know what really blew me when I first moved to the UK, going back about 15 years ago now, you know, I think the big thing is, especially on TV, you're seeing, I don't know, say the royalty, for example, you're seeing all this flash and all this type of stuff. So you see a lot of that. But what blew me, and I suppose that was the interesting part of moving over there, was seeing what you don't see on TV. So, you know, especially when I would go to different parts of the UK and you're going into maybe lower socioeconomic like type of areas, you know, one thing that blew me away was, say, in London, you'd have some really rich areas, then right next to that rich area was like really poor.
Massive contrast, yeah. You know, there's a massive contrast. And I was just the other day, I was talking to my husband about that, because there's this place here in Manchester called Worsley, and it's kind of called the Worsley Brow. And you come down, and then there's these amazing 6, 7, 8-bedroom houses. And then you drop down the hill, and then you see the terrace houses, and the difference between just that line. It's not even a line. There's nothing there.
Yeah, you know? And totally. And I think the big thing that blew me away as well is it feels like a lot of people live on top of each other. Like here in Australia, for example, it's such a big country. You know, there is a lot of space and all of that type of thing, right? Yeah. And look, don't get me wrong, living in Sydney, it is, you know, there is a lot of people living on top of each other, but that was what really blew me away when I first moved there. So I suppose that's a little bit about me. But I tell you what, you know, like you said, you've got to really, we said that one. But more than anything, let's hear your journey. You know, you've had some really, I suppose you probably had a few problems there, and you've really managed to really grow and develop into the amazing person you are and the work that you're doing today. So we'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, so I'm just going to delve a little bit more into my story. So when I came to the UK at 14, you can imagine, coming from the Caribbean, the sun is, sun's there, the food, the difference, the music, everything was different. And I started school the September after coming, getting here the June, and that was in the Midlands. So it was probably about an hour and 40 minutes away from where I am now, and now in Manchester. So in the Midlands, it was very different. My school wasn't very diverse whatsoever those days, 1992. So I got bullied really bad for the way that I spoke, because I was a new girl coming from Jamaica. So they want to hear my patois, they want to hear my twang, and, you know, they want to try to get me to repeat certain things, and then they would laugh in my face. And then, you know, it was a horrible time, and trying to get used to the system of the education, because what I was being taught in Jamaica was very different from what I came across in the UK. I mean, I knew nothing about the Industrial Revolution. I knew nothing about the coal mining system. And those are the things I was being taught. And I remember sitting in the classroom and the teacher's talking, and I kind of was muted for a while, because I just didn't want to show myself up so that I could speak, and then they'd hear my accent again, and then it'd start all over. So I struggled in that school, just to cut a long story short. And I left that school without one single GCSE. I didn't pass anything. However, I was very determined, though, because I knew within me that even though I learned to read very late, very, very late, I was a poor reader, and I knew within me that I loved the English language. I just loved, even though it's really messed up, but that's not a show. I really wanted to achieve my English language. So when I left the Midlands, I came to Manchester to live with my grandma. And I, at the time as well, I had no status in the country. That, if you know what that means, I mean, I had no indefinite leave to remain, or I had no kind of, you know, permanent residency there at the time. But I didn't let that stop me. I carried on. And I went on and achieved my English language. It was so amazing when I got my GCSE and C. And then I went into working for an organization at my first job there after leaving college. I also did some other vocational courses with that, went in that workplace. But I was always struggling. There's always something there. You know, there's always that. I knew that it was there, but nobody else knew. And I was in the workplace and I was struggling really, really bad. A lot of tasks, I was making a lot of mistakes and everything. And in a few years, 5 years into that job, I left that job and went into local government. And when I went into local government, I spent 12 years working in there. But that same struggle was there. I was struggling with a lot of tasks. I was reaching for promotions. Nothing was happening because every time I had an interview, there was a test attached to the interview process. And I struggled with maths in a massive way as well. So because what I didn't say earlier at the start of it, also going to school in Jamaica was very traumatic for me because, you know, if you didn't know your subjects, you'd get beat in your hand. You'd get, you know.
Really? Wow. That's so hectic.
Yeah, really developed. Until today, I have a massive thing about maths and numbers, but luckily it's not in my children. They're really, really good.
Yeah, crazy. But, so is it still like that over in Jamaica that you know of?
No, you're not allowed to capital punish anybody's children anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's just the reason why I ask is, say, like here in Australia, we've got like the Pacific Islands and stuff like that. And I often see things on like social media and that, and like you've got a lot of boarding schools over in the Pacific Islands.
Yeah.
And sometimes if like the young kids are playing up, the older boys are able to give them paddles and that. And I'm my God, like that's just hectic type of thing, like 80s type of stuff or even before then type of thing.
Yeah, I avoided it because I was terrified of it. But when I first started school, that was still a thing in Australia as well. I remember a few of my friends getting caned. They were allowed to get you across the knuckles with like a ruler.
The middle of our hand,
Crazy. It's hard to think of these days because it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't.
Human rights.
Yeah, totally. But sorry, you were saying about, you know, being at work and all of that type of stuff and struggling with math and all that.
Yeah, so in the workplace, I mean, I had amazing amount of skills in regards to the networking and negotiating because being neurodiverse, as you know, Will, we have so many amazing skills that overcome the challenges that we may have of being neurodiverse. And, you know, I was struggling in the workplace so much. And in 2016, because when I came to the UK, my grandma, bless her soul, she's not with us anymore, but she used to take me to family member houses and stuff. And I always see the picture on the wall of them wearing that cap and gown and, you know, the whole, I always thought, you know, I really wanted to know what you had to do to achieve that. And so it always been a burning desire in the back of my head. So whilst I was in this job, I decided that I was struggling so much. I was going through anxiety, depression, everything going on at the same time. And I remember pulling up on the roadside one day and I rang my husband and I rang my workplace. And I said to my team leader, I can't come in today. You know, I'm really, really bad. And I rang my husband. And my husband said, we have to sort something that, something that's got to give with this job because you're really struggling, you're suffering too much. And I made that decision to leave the job in 2016. And then when I went into studying, well, that the next part of the story will start. We'll talk about that later on, but that's when everything changed, yeah.
Wow, crazy. But, you know, you're talking about how, you know, you saw, in a way, you could see your goals up on the, by seeing past family members and all that. And it's like, man, I want to work towards that, which is, I think that's really important for young people to see. I remember when I was younger, I think probably one of the things that really helped me was my parents would often show, you know, they would, so I don't know if you know who Kerry Packer is, but Kerry Packer is he was a big billionaire who owned Channel 9 and started the one day cricket here in well, in the world, he'd have the West Indies coming over to Australia and playing. He started all of that. And I remember Mum and Dad always pointing out these people going, see that person there? That person used to be dyslexic, or Tom Cruise, I see. And I remember seeing that and thinking, struggling at school and thinking, how the hell am I ever going to do this type of thing? But, yeah. Sometimes it's so important to have those things to work towards and visually see to be able to help you to get towards that. Yeah. But, entering into education, for example, so, like you said, you were going through a lot of depression and stress at work, all of that. What were some of the educational barriers that you faced when, you did eventually get in?
Yeah, so I just want to go back to pick up back on the point that you just said there, Will. And
that's okay.
This is why this is so important for me with the work that I do, because representation for me is very much key. And I go back to that point you say, if I can't see it, I can't be it. So going back to what we're talking about there, children, it's important that they can see people with dyslexia who are successful in an array of different cultural diversities. And it's a massive thing. But the educational barriers that I face, I mean, come on, spending 17 years in the corporate world and going to university and trying to reference, Harvard referencing and all of those things. I was like, oh, what have I got myself into here right now? This is too much. And then what happened was, because I didn't know that I had dyslexia or dyspraxia at the time and the ADHD thrown in there somewhere, it's been that I didn't get the support when I was doing my first degree. However, I did finish with a first class honours degree. That was.
Can I ask what year that was, just out of curiosity?
Okay, so I finished my work in 2016. So from 2016 to 2017, I did a foundation degree because I had no GCSEs. So I had to start from the bottom. The foundation degree kind of supplemented the maths and English that I didn't have from leaving school. So that was a way of me getting in there. And then from passing the foundation degree, I went on to do the full degree, which was another 2 years after that. So 2017, 18, 19, I graduated with my BSc First Class Honours.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
But the reason why I asked is we had someone come on the podcast earlier on in the year. And so it's a little bit different here in Australia. So, really, if I know over in the UK there, if you think, hey, look, I might be dyslexic or ADHD, the universities actually put you through to get tested. Is that correct?
Yeah. What happened to me was it is a story and a half, and people who I hope you're going to buy the book because you'll know a lot more from reading my book. I don't want to give away too much, actually.
That's cool.
You really need to find out more about the story in a deeper context from the book. And the book is like an educational tool. So diagnosis, I my laptop wasn't working at the time, Will. The spell checker wasn't working. So the last few weeks of I was doing my dissertation and stuff, the last few weeks of my degree, I thought I'm going to make an effort and get someone to check my work. So I built up a relationship with this lady in the way that we'd chat and have a laugh every day. And we just became great friends. And she just kept saying to me, I'm a librarian, but I'm here to help you guys as well. So if you've got any work to be checked, just bring it in. Mm-hmm. That's what I did. So I asked her, I said, I've got some work that I need to look at. She looked at it and she saw all the errors that were in there, Will. And when I went back to her, she said to me, this is the game changer that changed everything and that moment in my life that, oh, my God, I'm getting choked up about it now. But she said to me, Keisha, I didn't know that you're dyslexic. And I just turned around and I said, what did you say?
What are you talking about?
Believe me, there was like a light. Have you ever seen
that? The gods looking down. Yeah, cool.
It was one of those moments. And honestly, she said, what did you say? And she said to me, yes, because I have a brother who is dyslexic and I see the same pattern, the way you write things and your spelling and everything and the way it's written. And she helped me and she said, you need to go about getting an assessment. And so me being what I am, hearing that, because I've always heard the word dyslexic. My friends around me had dyslexia, but it wasn't, I didn't ever think that I had dyslexia for some reason. I don't know why, but you know, and then I've started emails firing left. My keyboard was steaming. Well, honestly, those emails going to student support services. And straight away they said, yes, let's get you assessed. And they paid for it, 3 hours of test. Wow. And I remember she said to me, I don't know how you got this far in your studies because you're severely dyslexic. You're severely dyslexic. I don't know how you got this far. It changed. That moment in time there changed my whole life, because then I started to realize, oh, the penny dropped. Will,
crazy.
Puzzle. It was like a massive, you know, throw a puzzle up in the air and it falls and it goes everywhere. But when I got that diagnosis, it was like magic. Everything was like
falling into place type of thing. Yeah. And I can totally relate, because I only was diagnosed with ADHD last year. I've known that I was dyslexic since I was like 10 or something like that. And then it's like, oh my God, now I know why I stress out when I walk into a busy shopping center or I can't do this or that type of thing.
Everything becomes so overwhelming, because when I did that ADHD self-test, it came out at 92%, and I was like, oh Lord, I've always seen overlapping traits that is there. Yeah. Because
It is a common story too. It was Shay we were speaking to earlier. I think it was actually last podcast. And for her, it was a very similar moment where she was working with a tutor, and she'd made her way, you know, really impressively through a lot of her education. And then finally that penny dropped there. But I think it's something that we hear a lot, and it ties the neurodivergent community together, even though we're all so different, you know, between dyslexia and autism and ADHD. We all tend to have that moment when we realize or when we get diagnosed, and it is emotional, because your whole history suddenly makes sense, you know, and then as you discover more about it, it makes even more sense. Yeah. And then you learn tools to deal with it. I'm the same as well, almost. I'm currently in the process of getting diagnosed as ADHD as well as autistic. And I was the same as you. I have friends, obviously, who are ADHD. It just never occurred to me. I never looked into it. And now that it's been suggested to me, I'm looking into it and going, okay, now that's the last little puzzle piece.
So obviously, you know, you found out something that you probably didn't think in a million years you would probably, that it was probably a bit of a shock, all of that type of stuff. Now, how did you overcome these how did you overcome these educational barriers, you know, because it would have been so much clearer now. And you would have been like, oh, my God, that's why I really struggle to take in that information. What were some of the things that you started to then do and all of that type of stuff?
See, I don't know if anyone is listening or any of you guys can relate to this one, but I study really different in a way that I cannot read an article and think that in the next few days I'm going to go sit down and write what I've read from the article a week ago or whatever. So I have to have the article right there with me. So the way my brain works is I've got 15 million tabs open on my laptop at the same time that I'm studying. And these 15 million tabs, I have to have them open because I need to remember, need to get to them click, click, click. And people think, wow, look at the mess. And I'm like, I know it's a mess, but that's all like the tabs open my brain. So when I started my degree, my tutor was amazing. So it really is important in the environment that you're in, because I cannot fault the support that I got within my educational establishment where I studied with USEN Manchester, which is here, part of the Manchester College here in the UK, one of the biggest groups. And it was just amazing because the support that I got from them, you know, getting a diagnosis, after that, they were ready to put, even though I'm about to leave, they were ready to put all these interventions into place to help me too. But I was like, at the end of it, I'd achieved my first class already. So I went straight into, after doing the education barrier, so I used resources. So my lecturer was great to say, use this website called Cite This For Me. And that was a game changer. You don't know how much I used that website and I relied on it, because I put my ISBN number in, I put my DOI number in, and it gives me my referencing in the way and the format that it needs to be. So I took charge of using resources, assistive technology, because I started my degree, my master's, straight after my degree. Then again, with the Manchester Metropolitan University, I had all these interventions into place. So I had a PLP. A PLP is a personal learning plan, which allows me to get extra time in exams, which is still not long enough. It's about 25% extra. And then it gives me a support worker to help me. So when I write things, she can check it and see that I've got it in academically the way that it should be. So I use the resources. And also in the classroom, I had I use assistive technology where I had my laptop in the lecture room. It's recording everything that the lecturer is saying, and it's slide by slide. So later on, everything is there. I can just go back to it if I need to make notes or whatever. Because one of the hardest things that you can ask someone who's neurodiverse or dyslexic or whatever is to be in that classroom and sit there trying to copy from that board, and the lecturer wants to move on, and then you feel like you're holding up the rest of the classroom. So the
lecturer, and you're afraid to say anything. It's like you don't want everyone to look at you and be like, hey, what's going on? Yeah, totally.
I do remember the teachers being quite condescending to the kids who would fall behind.
Because it's slow. You're seen as slow, and it's the way we process information. So we're copying it from the board. Because another big thing with me is I cannot write, you know, handwriting, and this is a big thing. Handwriting, I don't write in uppercase, lowercase. I can't. So I write everything in uppercase, because my brain won't switch between as fast enough to write. If I'm writing Keisha, it has to be all uppercase in all capitals.
Interesting. But do you know what I found? And, like, you know, I think a big thing that you find with a lot of neurodivergent people is that sometimes we're afraid to ask questions, right?
Yes.
And I believe, and this is what I, this is just my theory. It's not tested or anything like that. But I remember when I was in school, if I didn't know something, can I ask the teacher, hey, what do you mean? And they'd be like, what do you mean? Haven't you been listening? Yeah, you've been staring out the window. Yeah. So obviously over time, you get it, you think, okay, well, if I ask a question, I'm going to get in trouble. Do you know what I mean? So why would you ask a question? And this is the problem with asking questions, because we're trying to clarify what the hell you're saying.
We're trying to learn, you know, like
exactly. Yeah. And I think this is where, you know, when you're in school, if you haven't finished what you're writing or what the whoever's wrote something, you don't say, no, I haven't finished, because you're thinking, I'm going to get in trouble for this. So you say, yeah, I'm done. And then you haven't completed it.
You haven't done it because you want to feel like you don't want to look like the slow one holding up the rest of the class, because everybody else has got the notes down because they're going 10 miles faster than you are. And, you know, it's our processing skill, you know, memory stuff.
Especially if you're being bullied at school, twofold. You don't want to bring attention to yourself.
No. Well, do you know what? You know what, right? Like, and this isn't all teachers. This is just because I had some really good teachers, and then some really bad ones. And I can tell you right now, some of the bullies at school were the teachers. Do you know what I mean? Because if you're in class, and then that teacher puts you down in front of your class, that then lets the rest of the class know that, hey, that person's struggling, that person's an idiot, or, you know, we know they're not idiots, but that's how you feel, right? Yeah. And so that almost opens up the book for people to start attacking you, if that makes sense, which is wrong. You know, but out of, you know, in saying that, you know, what advice would you give to anyone experience similar difficulty? So when I sort of say this, maybe they've just got it, because I can tell you right now how many people I meet who are either in their late 20s, mid 30s, even into their 40s, and probably even older, just finding out that they come under the they're neurodivergent, and you know, it probably is a bit of a shock. What advice would you give to anyone experience similar difficulties like this?
Well, in a sense of if there's someone out there who think they may be dyslexic or something, it may not be dyslexia. It may be something else that's going on, because under the neurodiversity umbrella, as we all know, there's a lot of conditions on that. So anything that you may think is going on there, remember these conditions are hereditary as well. So you may have gotten it from, and you got to think about the possibility of your children having it. So it's important if you know, to get that support so that you can be able to support your child as well and advocate for them to get that help. So it's important if there's anyone who's recently been diagnosed and they're struggling emotionally, because it is a tug of emotions when you find out, you know, you're thinking, oh my Lord, so I've gone through all my life until the age of 41 and I just didn't know that I was dyslexic, you know. And, you know, now that I know, I can hone in on the strengths that I have rather than focus on the weaknesses that are there, the challenges that are there. So it's about finding your strengths. If you've recently been diagnosed, you know yourself well enough to know that certain things give you that fire in your stomach, doesn't it? Certain things that you do in life give you that fire. So it's about knowing who you are, honing on those strengths. Don't get too hung up on the challenges. Just try and work over them. And get, you know, find your tribe as well. It's a big thing.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a definitely good one. You know, I think, you know, it was so, – and I don't see, when I was younger, especially going through high school, that I knew I was dyslexic. But I say this a lot, I thought when I was at school, I was the only dyslexic person. Do you know what I mean? But once I've started to be open about it, it was amazing how many people I meet now, and even people who I used to go to school with, because they see all the work that I'm doing and that, and they say, hey, Will, I'm ADHD or I'm dyslexic or I'm autistic or something like that. And it's like, oh, my God. But you, and like we said before, you do feel like, you know, when you're sort of open about it with other people, it sort of helps you a little bit. You feel a little bit more comfortable. That's my experience anyway.
Carlos's last comment was quite relevant to that.
I'll get that up, actually.
Yeah.
So Carlos actually shared, I was diagnosed with PTSD and TBI. What is TBI?
Traumatic brain injury.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yep. In 2018. In 2018. ADHD 19. In 2019. It was ADHD that gave me hope, led me to a new community. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Can I just ask Kisha, is there anything to do with dyslexia that you find you can make work for you quite well?
Yeah, I am a great networker and communicator when it comes to, you know, this is why I do things like the radio and doing an interview. And I was, when Will was talking about, it's just a chat, and this is how I conduct my interview, because being dyslexic, I like things to be simple. It has to be simple for me. No, all of this thing. And people always say to me, oh, have you got questions that you're going to be asking me at the end? And I'm like, I don't do scripted interviews. It's a chat. It's just a chat. It's simple what it is. I keep it simple, being neurodiverse. I keep it simple just as it is. So, yeah, that's the way it is.
So I'm assuming the questions we sent through to you didn't even read?
No.
The reason why I say is I'm the exact same. Do you know what I mean? I'm the exact same. Like people say, hey, I've sent through the questions. I'm like, oh, look, I don't care. Because personally, I just love sitting down. And it's almost like a test of my knowledge. You know what I mean? So if
it's your story. So who knows your story more than you?
Exactly. So it really but I have had some things before when people have asked me a question and I haven't known it, and I've gone, I actually don't know what that means, to tell you the truth. But then they've explained, I'm like, oh, yeah, I know exactly what that means. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? But I can definitely relate to you. I'm very good at networking myself. I love, and this is the thing, I shared something on LinkedIn or just on social media in general the other day, that when I moved to Sydney, I haven't been able to connect with as many people and make friends. I mean, outside of business. And for me, I thrive off social interaction. I love it. Do you know what I mean? And not having that, it's almost like kryptonite, like destroying me type of thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So, you got a nice little comment there from Timmy.
Yeah, so we've got Timmy.
Thank you, Timmy. Timmy's on.
I love this conversation. Oh, is this a friend of yours?
Yeah, Timmy's one network. He's doing a PhD as well about dyspraxia and all. He's such a great guy, Timmy. Thank you, Timmy.
Awesome. No, we should like reach out to him and get him on the podcast sometime if he's interested.
Please, Timmy, you didn't hear that? You are going to be coming on Will's podcast because honestly, he really is.
You know what we've actually found, and it hasn't been like we planned it this way, but most of the people have mostly been females so far that we've had. So it's sort of like whenever we see some guys and all that, we're sort of like, man, because I think we sort of thought that maybe guys might be not as open to share type of thing. That's what we were worried about.
Alex as well. Alex will happily come on here because Alex has done stuff with Matthew Head. Alex Olanja, I can never remember how to pronounce his name, but I'll connect you anyway, Will. You're probably already connected anyway. I think you are connected.
I could be. But, we were sort of like, man, it'd be cool to get a few more guys. But it's just sort of like Alex, we reach also, out
Benjamin,
to people.
Benjamin is another guy who'd be happy to come on here as well. He's in my network. He'd be amazing to come on and talk about his
I'm preparing my application for my PhD.
Well,
good luck to you, my man. I hope it goes well. awesome. So what were we up to, actually? So we've said, what advice would you give to anyone? So if we have a look here, what sort of training do you think might benefit neurodivergent students prior to study to ease the journey, like and I think when we were sort of putting these together, we were sort of like, some people go into, say, a workplace or even education, and someone's like, oh, you're dyslexic, what do you need? And sometimes those people actually don't know what they need because that's why they're reaching out to say, hey, I'm dyslexic, because they're hoping that person might be able to understand and be able to support them. So what type of training or something would some people like probably would be good for them to have going into extra study there?
Yeah, things like knowing how to organize themselves and, we have a tendency because things are overwhelming. And this is from my point of view, my lived experience, not necessarily for anyone else but myself. But I find that as a neurodiverse person, dyslexia, I can procrastinate quite often because I'm overwhelmed by what I need to start on. So I look at the assignment, I look at the brief, I look at the information, and I've got to sit there and we've got to decipher the first question out, and then I look at it, and then I've got to go and do the research to do all of this now. So I think students would benefit from knowing how to organize themselves in a way that is going to be good for them personally. It has to be an individual basis. And also things like getting that support of how to write academically in the way that they're going to need to for that, because we don't necessarily sometimes find the words that we need, because I've been studying already, and this, a lot of people may relate to this one, is I'll change a whole sentence up because I can't spell a certain word to go in that sentence. You know, I'll do things like that. So it's having that support and having the resources as well, use of assistive technology, train them how to use it properly and effectively. Yeah. Don't just give them like, well, here in the UK, they are really good, actually, because they will come to your house. I remember them coming out to my house to train me on how to use the assistive technology. So make use of that and get as much training as you can. And also learn how to kind of keep track of what you need to be doing and get that support from your lecturer as well, or have that network around you in your student community to say that, have a student body as well. Do you know someone who you can go to and say, you know, I've got this assignment question, but I'm really struggling with the way that I need to be the formatting my answer to this question. So get that support, that help is very important.
Interesting you say about the changing of the sentence and stuff, because I know that's a coping it's a coping skill for people with stutters as well. If they're starting to hit a wall, they just change
the word.
You know, and I really like the part that you spoke about, you know, just having a support network or something about a certain question. I think some of the hardest things was when I was studying was you have a question, you go and ask about that question and you go, oh, okay. Then you go on to the next question and then you're like, holy crap.
Oh, what do you now?
I'm on the next, you know, then you feel like you're going backwards and forwards type of thing.
And being neurodiverse, we're so critical of ourselves. So we're a bit reluctant to show our work to people because we're going to be criticized of the way we wrote that, the way we spelled that, or the way the whole formatting or something is. So we can often struggle on our own without asking for that help. And that's so important because hadn't I asked Leslie, let's look at my own story, my own scenario, picture the other way around, where hadn't I asked Leslie for that help with my work? You know that possibly I could still not have been picked up, you know?
True. Yeah, that's...
So.
Well, you know, it was funny because I, and probably our listeners have probably heard me say this story a lot, but the only reason I was picked up for ADHD was when I released my book, I had a friend of mine read it who is a psychologist in like neurodiversity. And she's like, well, reading your book, it sounds like have you ever thought that you might be ADHD? So I went and got tested and it came back I was ADHD from her reading my book.
So what was it that was reading? What was in your book that was turned into?
Well, if I think back to it, I think there was a lot of stuff I shared in the book about how when I'd go to the shopping center, I found it really, you know, frustrating,
overwhelming.
Stuff like that. Yeah, overwhelming. Yeah. I found that when I was in class, I would spend a lot of time just looking out the window and couldn't. You know, I just, you know, little things like that, struggling with depression and anxiety and all of that type of stuff. And that's where she's like, yeah, I think you come in. She's my friend. So she was like, come on in and we'll get you tested. And, it came back. I'm highly, very hyperactive. But that's the thing as well, right? Like you spoke about how, like, you know, you didn't know you were dyslexic. And I think sometimes when, especially with my ADHD, when I used to think about ADHD back in the day, I would think about some crazy kid running around as if he'd been drinking red cordial or on lollies or, you know, like, I wasn't like that. Do you know what I mean? And I think sometimes the perception of what, say, dyslexia is or ADHD or even autism as well isn't what society makes it out to be sometimes, if that makes sense.
But that's really the core of this whole conversation, I think, is, you know, and it leads well into the next question, I guess, is education of the general society as well as, educators themselves.
Oh, I love that in recognizing this.
So, you know, going on to that, what would you like teachers to know more about regarding neurodiversity? Because the biggest thing I find is, okay, yeah, I might be open about being dyslexic and ADHD, but at the end of the day, unless if they're not that themselves, a lot of the time they have no idea about what to do. And without that training, I don't blame them. But I can tell you right now, some of them actually do want to learn. But where do they learn that?
Okay, for me, I would, you know, if I was to become the Prime Minister of the UK or Minister of Education or something, this is what I would do personally. I'd retrain all teachers to understand every element of neurodiversity and have the resources in that classroom to be able to, I'm not saying that they're going to be diagnosing children, but look out for the children and know what to be looking out for to be able to give them that support and intervention in the classroom. Because I've had the same experience with my own school, where my children are also neurodiverse, by the way. My 22-year-old is diagnosed at university with dyspraxia. My twin girl is diagnosed with dyspraxia and other stuff going on there. I think a bit autistic as well. My son is in the process of diagnosis for ADHD. So, yeah, my family is very like that. So it's important for our children, right? And I'm speaking on behalf of this, the way the system is sometimes with our children, and especially in the Black community, where they often can write off our little boys and say that they've got behavioral problems. Oftentimes it's not that. There's something deeper going on in there. Prison system, going on to that, just to touch a little bit now, there's so many reports coming out from the prison system to say that over 50% of the inmates are neurodiverse in some way or another. You know, and that's because they've slipped through the net through the schooling from reception, grade one all the way up through primary school, gone through that, slipped through the net there, gone straight into secondary school, slipped through the net there, completely end up now getting to that 16-year-old frustration years of that teenage part of their life. And then they end up wrong when then they end up in the prison system. That is happening quite a lot. So this is why it's so important that our teachers are fully equipped and understand how to be able to support them and identify it so that they can get the assessment that they need to go on to get the support and the intervention in the classroom, whether they'll be going to secondary school or primary school, especially into college. And then when they go to university, be able to access all the amazing support that's there. We have something here in the UK called the DSA, which a lot of people don't know about, which is a disability student allowance, which when you start university and you got that piece of paper to say that you're new, you've got dyslexia or dyspraxia or any of these learning differences, you get access to that support that's there with assistive technology, equipment, support worker, PLP, university support, you know. So it's important that our children are getting diagnosed at a very young age as much as possible.
Yeah, it needs to be embedded rather than just teach them a bit. I think it needs to be embedded into
But we shouldn't have this system. We shouldn't even be having this conversation, because everything in society should be so in the way of the neurodiverse way, because it makes sense. You know, we shouldn't have we shouldn't have schools that are just dedicated to dyslexia, because that's how the whole teaching system should be conducive so that everyone can understand. Because even if you're non-neurodiverse, you can understand from a dyslexic point of view the teaching.
It's simplified a lot of the time.
Simplified, exactly. Yeah.
And if the goal of education is to, you know, best arm children with knowledge and you know, everything they need to approach life later on, then this, you know, it's kind of negligent to just not have this part of it be looked at.
You know, like, this is the thing. Like, what I work in is in training and education. So I'm dealing with a lot of neurodistinct people, right? And a big thing I find is when you can understand the person and all that type of stuff, it is and you can adapt to what they need. You can probably adapt to a little bit of their personality as well. You can get so much out of that student regardless of their behavior and all that. I've seen some really, you know, people who you would probably class as very bad behaved people who I've been able to work with them, and we've had some really great friendships during their study period there. So I think the teachers do play a huge role. And look, I will say that, you know, from what my experience was, I did have some really good teachers who did probably do that little bit extra to help me. But I also feel that there's some teachers who probably just maybe they shouldn't be teaching because they're sick of their job.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You know, you can't be picky and choosy. If they don't want to teach and understand and assist neurodiverse children, well, they probably shouldn't be, because it's a large percentage of the kid of any given cross section of kids they're going to get in that classroom at any time.
Exactly. So true.
Exactly. Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. So, you know, in saying that, you know, what gap from what your experience and all that, and you've shared some really, really great points about some really great stuff and some really supportive stuff when you were studying, but what gaps do you think still exist at universities and colleges and around understanding of neurodiversity?
Firstly, in the education establishment, this is very key that they have a great support network within the disability. Some people call it disability support. So every university and college needs that department to be able to provide them with the support that they need, because oftentimes I've had someone contact me last year, I think it was, and she said to me, I've actually given up university because I can't get the support. I can't access the support. And that's a shame. That is a real shame. In 2022, when it was last year, and we're now in 2023, people shouldn't have to be leaving and not getting the right support. So the gap that stands there is, I would like to see all of them having a better understanding, to be able to having that awareness, to be able to identify sometimes that if you see a student which is struggling, you know, consistent struggle, you know, it's something's not right there. You have to take that up with that student and make sure it could be the student, as like myself, don't even know what it is themselves, you know. So it's on from exploring what it possibly could be, what it could be, then they'll find out that, well, you know, this is what it is and this is how we can support. Support is absolutely key, because I hear it all the time. I hear it from my own community here in the UK, because it's when I came out and said, I am dyslexic, and I started sharing my story, a lot of people kept coming out and come to me and said, I've never spoke about it the way you have before, and I'm so glad that you're now raising awareness. I've just been suffering in silence. You know, people do that.
It's so true. And I think when you do see other
and
people
that's who shame, you know why that is? Shame and embarrassment, because they're worried that people are going to think less of them because they are dyslexic. And the thing is, they don't understand that once you can identify that and hone into that super, that my, I call it the amazing things that I do, my superpower, because it is, it may not be for everybody because everyone experience is different. And they might think that, well, it's not my superpower because I struggle on a daily basis with this.
Yeah.
And this. But from my perspective,
No, that's cool. That's cool.
If I could just throw in a point on the gaps as well, in Australia we have something called the NDIS, and it on paper, and when you're on it, my sister benefits greatly from it. It's one of the most amazing disability support programs I've ever seen. But getting
to onto it is the problem.
Ridiculous. Oh. It could be helping so many more children, especially with their education. There's so much support.
Can't access it.
Mum might correct me, but I think it was at least a year, if not two, just to get my sister on there. And she is very visibly challenged in some areas. And
it
really
doesn't even cover, cover a lot of the stuff as well. So it doesn't cover dyslexia or ADHD. It's only really autism. So if you're dyslexic and ADHD, see you later. You know what I mean? It's completely different here to the UK.
Fingers crossed, though, they're looking at putting ADHD on there.
Yeah.
Why dyslexia is not on there, I have no idea. I mean, I was amazed at the...
To Betty, you know, when it comes to, like, we've got a service here called CAMS.
Yeah.
And you're looking at a 2-year waiting list.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Well, here in Australia, just to get tested for ADHD, we're on like 2-year waiting lists. And a lot of the time, we're now hearing of a lot of women who aren't able to get diagnosed because it's getting passed off as something else. They've taken them 9 times sometimes, and that's just ridiculous.
And I got to say, you know, this podcast and the previous one, and I think we've done a few more on dyslexia, I feel for you guys because, I mean, you know, the percentage of neurodivergent people who are dyslexic is huge. And the conversation around it, even though like I've been aware of it my whole life, and I feel like it's been known about longer in a public sense than say ADHD or autism in a bigger sense, the conversation seems a little behind. It's kind of sad. I think we really need to push it out there a bit more.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain because yes, that's true. You know what I mean? But it's like you can, and like you like I'm sure you're the same, that you put in so much hard work and then sometimes you feel like you're not making any leeway, but you are, and it's just so difficult sometimes, especially when the government, say here in Australia, isn't even listening. And it's like, yeah, okay, we've got a lot of stuff happening here, but this is a big problem just as well, you know, stuff like that. But anyway, we're getting close to the end here. You know, you've got some really cool news happening with your book and all that. So for anyone listening and all of our listeners through our podcast and that, can you tell us a little bit about your book? We don't want you to give it all away, all right, because we want people to buy it. And buy how can people get in touch with you and follow you and all of that?
So, yeah, as you know, Will, I'm the LinkedIn queen. So LinkedIn is a place where I have my tribe of network, amazing neurodiverse people. So anyone who wants to connect with me can connect with me on LinkedIn, which is Keisha Adesuwebe. I'm sure Will will put out the details and you'll be able to connect with me that way. I mean, the book now is about my story. So coming from Jamaica, so it shares my journey coming from Jamaica, coming to the UK, all the challenges that I encountered on my journey. Talked about my family, talks about me studying, me in the workplace, talks about parents, what parents can do to help their own children, to support them, what universities can do. So the book is more like a toolkit, really, can help everyone. There's something in there for everyone, because even if you're not neurodiverse, you just want to know more about dyslexia, I've got it.
So you could be a teacher, for example.
You could be a lecturer, you could be a parent, you could be, you know, so the book is an all-rounder for everyone. And if you want to get the book, please don't order through Amazon, because I really don't get anything much back from that order. So if you want it, connect with me and I will send you a personalized link. And from that personalized link, you'll be able to get a signed copy from moi, obviously, a signed copy from me. And I just need to work out how much I need to add on there for Australian postage if anyone is on here listening in Australia and want a copy of the book. And it's also available, possibly, for hard copies, I definitely advise you to get your signed copy from myself. However, if you wanted to access it, like on your, I'm not going to get anything much from this either, but it's there on Kindle as well, so you can read it on your device, and I don't mind if you're going to do that, but I'd like you to have the physical book in your hand where you can, I like to be able to put a post-it note to mark the pages and look at, flash through the book. So the book is a great tool, and then you can pass it on and share it with others as well, you know, for them to understand a bit more about new.
And you do plan to actually bring out an audio book later on as
well. Yes, the audio is coming out. I'm just recording that this week, so the audio is coming out very soon, this month. Yeah,
awesome. Awesome, you rock. You know, Kev, did you have any other questions you wanted to ask before we close off? Does anyone listening have anything they wanted to ask before we close off? But Kev, I am all good. Nice. But look, thank you so much for taking the time to meet with us today. It's been a pleasure to listen to your story and just have a chat. I think that's been the cool part, you know, and this is what I love about technology these days. You can connect with people.
I know. When I told my children, right, that I'm having a podcast today in Australia, they were like, "Mommy, you're going to Australia?" And I'm like, "Do you know how far Australia is?"
Yeah. I won't be back for dinner if that was. I won't be back till the end of the week.
Australia's on my list of places to come, though, Will. So it's there. One of the twin was walking them to school and was like, but it's got loads of spiders, Mommy. Why do you want to go there? It's got loads of spiders. I'm not going to that side of Australia. I'm going to the part without the spiders.
Yeah. what you should have said was, look, if you're bad, we'll send you to Australia, because back in the day, if you were like a criminal or bad in the UK, you'd get sent to down to Australia. Because we're Yeah, didn't you know that? So Yeah, so Australia was like
a penal colony.
And it was so the British found it, and then they're like, I think they had a big problem with overcrowding and all that in the UK. So if you stole bread or you were bad in the UK, they put you on ships and shipped you over to Australia to start a new colony here in Australia. And a lot of the British people are like, man, we sent all the bad people to the good country and left them. apparently that's what they say, because we've got all the beaches, we've got good weather, all of it. But I won't hold you up too much longer. Thank you so much for
thanks, Will.
On.
Thanks, Kev. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Keisha.
It's been a pleasure. No, thank you so much.
Please connect with me on LinkedIn. If you find me on there, Keisha Adair Swaby. And I'm happy to answer any question anyone may have or any speaking engagement you want me to speak at your event online or face-to-face, I'm here.
Awesome. Thank you.
Take care, guys.
So see you soon. Awesome. So for anyone listening, please connect all of that with all of our social media platforms. My name's Will, joined by my co-host, Photon John. Thank you so much for listening. This is the Open Hearted Podcast. Till next time.
Bye.